great day, comrades. We sail into history.
Totally Football Show at the World Cup.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable this.
In the spotlight this time, it's the groups of DEF, the groups of DEF. And here to tell us about them, Jack Lang, Matt Davis, Daniel Story and James Horncastle.
Now he cannot stop.
Yeah, and hello to you, listener. What an exciting panel we have as we continue our exploration of the upcoming World Cup. Jack Lang, especialista in football sudamericano. A little bit Esperantoized, that.
That's lovely.
That's you, isn't it, really? Matt Davis, what you haven't seen of international football, they don't show on Nigerian television.
That's true.
Daniel Story, whose book, Gazza in Italy, audiobook, is available at $4.99 on Audible and iTunes. And James Horncastle, here to tell us all about Italy's 2-1 win over Saudi. Good times. We've also got all sorts of other things coming up, as you know, if you listen to our first one. Fun games. There'll be knowledge and there'll be global sounds on the way. But let's begin with our first group, brought to you by the letter D.
Big D is dashing through the door. Little D is dancing across the floor. D's in a dinghy on the deep.
Are you excited about this one, James?
Yeah, I think it's got the best kits in the World Cup, all in one group. I just think it's fantastic.
All right. Which is
I
your
mean,
favorite?
Just getting in today, I had to like sort of, you know, navigate that huge queue out for Oxford Circus.
Is it still outside?
People sleeping outside, trying to get one of those Nigeria kits.
Right.
It's quite remarkable.
Right. Okay. So the kits are nice. There's some lovely football as well. Hey, Daniel.
It's a really interesting group, I think, in that the two top seeds, what we consider top seeds, Argentina and Croatia, are kind of afraid of pitfalls that Nigeria represent. I think this will be a bridge too far for Iceland, but Nigeria will certainly fancy themselves of upsetting at least one of those two, which kind of makes every game in the group feel like it's worth watching.
Our man on Nigerian TV, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, I think they've got a reasonable chance, actually, Nigeria. It's a nice group, this. It's not quite one of those perfect ones where you get a team from every continent, but obviously we've got Iceland in there as well, smallest nation ever to qualify for a World Cup, and we enjoyed them so much at the Euros. But Nigeria, fourth favourites probably to win the group, but it's so open. I think you can make a case for any of the four teams finishing top or finishing bottom, even.
Well, that's interesting. We'll try and do just that, then. Let's begin with the big dogs, Argentina. Jack, just a quick reminder, if you come top of this group, you're probably going to get Denmark in the last 16. But if you come second, France, probably. What are Argentina going to do, Jack?
I think it's going to be a tough World Cup for them, actually. I imagine there's a decent chance they will get out of the group by hook or by crook, but by no means is that a given. It's a team that not only is over-dependent on Lionel Messi, it's a team that also struggles to get the best out of him sometimes. They both need him to basically score all the goals, but they also need him as a creator. We saw in qualifying, he was very often dropping deep into the centre circle, kind of trying to take responsibility in the midfield because the production line isn't there. I think there are question marks over the system, whether it suits the players. In fact, maybe not even a question mark, it just doesn't really. Like, Sampaoli is a player who likes a high press, who likes a high defensive line. They don't have the pace at the back to do that, as we saw in the friendly against Spain. Absolutely slaughtered by quick attacks, and I think there could be more of that to come for Argentina.
Spain put 6 goals past Argentina. Now, was that because Sampaoli was experimenting with his lineup, or were they just really bad?
They were just very, very bad.
Wow.
And there are still, you know, even after the questions of system, we've got some personnel issues. Sergio Romero, the first choice, has pulled out. He didn't seem to think, or his camp didn't seem to think it was actually that serious. Thought he could have recovered in time, so there's a bit of question marks behind the scenes, if you will. There are injury issues. Lucas Bilia, who's going to be a key player in midfield, is struggling with a back issue. If he doesn't make it, it could be Javier Mascherano in midfield, turns 34 this week, I think, and is not doing well if the Spain game was any evidence.
Jack, I hear what you're saying, but I don't believe you, because it's Argentina. I mean, they were runners-up at the last World Cup, despite all the problems. They've been runners-up in the past two Copa Americas, despite all the problems as well. And they've got Messi. What does anybody else think?
Sorry, I just wondered, Jack, if there's... I watched quite a lot of Boca Juniors this season, and I really, really like Christian Pavon. I just wondered if there's any chance of him actually getting some football. He's one of only three Superliga players actually in the squad.
If he is going to get game time, I think it might be to offer a slight variation, because Angel Di Maria, often Manuel Lanzini is going to play with Messi and Di Maria and kind of a trident behind the striker, but we see Di Maria cuts in all the time. Lanzini, if he starts on the left, is going to cut in all the time. Pavon, I think, would give a little bit more width. I know he can cut in from the left, does so at club level sometimes, but he's been used often on the right for Argentina. I think that might be an interesting option. You know, his determination, pace. I think he could possibly break into the team if he doesn't start, and maybe a bit of, you know, youthful energy, which is much needed. So if I had to pick a youngster that could make an impression, it would be him. Lo Celso as well, it will probably play, and is a pretty good player, I think.
A bit of, but the only settled part of that side, is apart from Messi playing, are the two centre-backs, Fazio and Otamendi. The rest has been just like watching Sampaoli play with a Rubik's Cube for the last 9 months, because I think they've played 10 different midfield combinations, 7 different striker combinations. They played with back three, back four. I don't think anyone could say with any certainty what the starting 11 will be when they play their first game. And I know people have made the comparison between Sampaoli and Conte, in that, you know, this period in particular now, where he's got time with the team, he'll be able to drill them, maybe make a country play like a club side. But Conte did have 2 years where he could at least lay the groundwork for that team. Sampaoli, it's the first time that Messi's actually had a coach for Argentina. I think we all recognise that Sampaoli's a very good coach.
You mean previously people have just said, kind of get on with it?
Well, I mean, look at his predecessors, you know, Diego Maradona, Tata Martino, Sabella, who probably was the best of the rest, Bowser. They've had three just in the space of qualifying alone. And I think they actually share a lot of similarities with Croatia, insofar as the talent is there for everyone to see, but the instability off the pitch, be it in the federation, be it in the changes on the bench, are actually hindering this side from reaching its potential, I'd say.
Blimey. Jack, what are the expectations in Argentina?
I think fairly tepid, I would say. But on James's point there, Sampaoli has said a few months ago he would rather have had the extra time on the training pitch than the pre-tournament friendlies, which works into the theory that he would like to regard it as a kind of club setup, but he just hasn't had the time. But
right.
The team did go and visit the Pope today, so
that's,
they might have God on their side.
And there's no telling how big an impact that could have. Matt, you commentate on the Argentine League for Nigerian TV, so you'll be aware that Nigeria have been put out by Argentina 4 times in the last 5 World Cups that they've been at.
Yeah, and 5 times in 6 they've been in a group with them. Extraordinary.
Wow. That is amazing. But more recent results have been more favourable to the Super Eagles.
Yeah, back in November, Nigeria won 4-2 in a friendly in which Argentina just completely collapsed, basically. But there's a sense of stability about Nigeria which is not there with Argentina, which was sort of evidenced in that game, really.
That scoreline again?
4-2, Nigeria.
To Nigeria?
Yeah.
Very impressive. No Messi that day, I believe.
Correct.
So what we're basically saying is a lot of people might look at this group and go, well, it's Argentina and won, but top spot is open to question there. What do you think, Daniel?
The only thing I would say about Argentina is that South American qualifying is notoriously difficult. It's one thing looking at Argentina taking 20 points from 10 games, but Croatia finished in the group behind Iceland, and they're both in the same group here. Nigeria have clearly improved and there is more stability than they would normally expect. But I still think Argentina will have plenty in this group. I think their issue comes when they probably play Spain in the quarterfinals. And at that point, I think Spain will be far too disciplined for them and they'll come unstuck. But I guess everyone in Argentina kind of sees this quarterfinals as a fairly reasonable achievement. And I think that's probably where they'll come unstuck.
What do you make then, Daniel, of the rest of the group? Who else do you see going through?
I think Croatia are really interesting because they've got huge problems at the moment in terms of politics around the team. So have Argentina. But in terms of the federation, their best defender is probably Dejan Lovren, and their best midfielder is certainly Luka Modric. And both of those are accused of committing perjury in defending the chief of the president of the federation in his trial. And I was in Croatia the last 2 weeks and they are not behind the team at all. There's no World Cup fever in Croatia whatsoever. They clearly have the tools in attacking areas to finish second in this group. But if Nigeria are going to upset one team in the group, I think it'll be Croatia. Their group performances were absolutely dreadful. And there's this golden generation which is aging and aging and aging and never quite delivering. It's all on Modric creating for Mandzukic, basically, with Perisic doing everything from the wings. And they're very easy to defend against.
Wow. And the inexperienced manager Zlatko Dalic.
Yeah, they obviously changed manager reasonably recently, which that you know, he came in for a must-win game, which they then won. Mm-hmm. So there is a feeling of, well, he did all he had to do, so therefore he deserves a bit of goodwill. But in terms of the playing side of things, there's not a lot of goodwill there.
Oh, dear. Nigeria. I bet there's some goodwill there, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. They had a tough qualification group to actually get here. They had Algeria and Cameroon in their group, but they were the first African side to book their place. They won four of their six games in the final stages of qualifying. They got lots of pace on the counter-attack. People like Victor Moses, Musa, Joel Obi, the experience of John Mikel Obi, who's playing in China now, obviously, but he looks like he's in reasonable condition. I think it's a bonus for them that they've got Croatia in their first game, because I agree with Daniel that Croatia's problems might hinder them, certainly in the early parts of the tournament. Very experienced coach. He's managed various countries around Africa. Gernot Rohr, German, previously in charge of Gabon, Niger and Burkina Faso. The worries for them is that if Odion Ighalo is going to be their central striker, he's also playing in China, but he's not scoring many goals. He's only got 3-16 for Nigeria. And at the other end of the pitch, Karl Akimi would be the first choice goalkeeper. Obviously, he's unavailable. He's got leukemia. They've made him the 24th man in the squad, which is a nice gesture. You would think that Victor Enyema would probably be the number one in his place, but he's played two games for Lille's B team all season. So at either end of the pitch, that's where the problems lie. But if they can catch Croatia cold in the first game, they give themselves a reasonable chance of maybe finishing second.
We've just seen Nigerian action, of course, at Wembley over the weekend, taking on England. What did you make of the performance there, Jack?
Yeah, interesting on the goalkeeper, actually, because the youngster, Francis Azou, I didn't think he was particularly impressive. He's tall, he was good in the air, picked a few crosses out, but his distribution was very shaky, and I didn't think he covered himself in glory on Kane's goal either. Tall man, but struggled to get down. He is young, but I think that would be a worry if having a 19-year-old rookie goalkeeper. They were poor in the first half, stretched by England, whose back five, I guess, pulled them out of shape. They didn't look comfortable at all. They switched systems in the second half and looked a great deal better. I think they're in with a chance of making it through, I do. They've got enough good players. Alex Iwobi looks like a player who takes responsibility when he plays for his country. He kind of probably a slightly more confident player maybe than we see at Arsenal sometimes. Mm. Certainly shooting-wise, we've seen him scuff 1,000 finishes in the Premier League this season, but he stroked home a lovely goal against England. I think there's good potential there if they can get a bit of momentum.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show, totally at the World Cup and in association with Paddy Power.
Duncan Alexander Opter has furnished us with some World Cup questions. Let me pose this one to you. Answers at the end, of course. Name the only World Cup which Nigeria have featured in which they haven't played Argentina.
Would that be the 94, 98 when they beat Spain in 3-2 in the group stage?
Answers at the end. And Duncan's other question, how many goals was Didier Six directly involved in the 1978 World Cup? A little bit of a twist on that one. Yeah. Right, well, OK, so problems then for Nigeria, problems for Croatia, and definitely problems for Argentina. Does this mean that we could see our boys doing it again? Iceland, 577 times smaller than Nigeria, the teeniest nation ever to qualify for the World Cup. One man who knows all about our boys is Stefan Augustsson. Stefan, there you are. Have you got World Cup fever?
Definitely. At least some kind of fever.
Right. I'm delighted to hear it. You guys gave so much pleasure to football fans worldwide in 2016. What are the odds of you pulling off something similar again?
Well, I think they're a little more difficult than last time. The World Cup's kind of a bigger stage with maybe a more difficult group with Croatia, Argentina and Nigeria. But in the big tournaments, anything can happen. And this Iceland team has really shown that it raises its game against big teams. So yeah. Who knows?
Absolutely, because it wasn't just Euros that was successful. You actually finished top of the qualifying group ahead of Ukraine, Turkey and Croatia, who you're going to meet again in the group.
Yeah, Croatia are kind of our biggest rivals, I think, in international football. They obviously knocked us out of the playoffs for the 2014 World Cup when we were so close to getting there. And then we had them in the group this time and managed to finish above them. So I'm sure they'll want to beat us, and we want to do the same.
Mm. I know there's some injury concerns about some of the squad, particularly Gylfi Sigurdsson. What's the feeling in Iceland going into this tournament?
Well, obviously, both of our main players, Gylfi Sigurdsson and Aron Einar, our captain, got injured. Gylfi has been injured for, you know, a couple months, and then Aron just got injured at the end of the season with Cardiff. But the good news is Gylfi's back. He came off the bench in our first friendly and actually scored. So he's doing good, and he should be fit to play. Aron is, in my opinion, an even more important player to our team just because he marshals the whole squad and really is, I think, our most important player, even though he's not the highest quality like Gylfi is. But he's not quite fit enough to be playing the friendlies. But knowing him, he'll probably play against Argentina. That's just kind of just the kind of character he is. So hopefully everyone will be fit, although maybe not completely match fit.
We were talking about Argentina and Croatia and how much talent they've got in their squads, but how at the same time those groups of players are beset by problems. There doesn't seem to be the unity that teams, for example, like Iceland have. Is this one of the advantages of being a tiny pool of people?
Well, I mean, we'd love to have players like Argentina have, especially going forward, but the having the kind of not as strong players really makes us rely on other things like team unity and working hard and the kind of fundamentals of football rather than maybe one star player and a lot of egos. So that's worked well for us. And that's kind of what the whole philosophy of the Icelandic team is. I mean, we're very excited to play against Messi in Argentina. That's a great honor for us, and everyone's very excited for that game. But we know what he can do, and if he decides to turn it on, which I think he probably wants to, knowing how this might be his last World Cup, and he really wants to win one, that could be a little scary.
I'm hearing quiet confidence in your voice, though, Stefan. Is there going to be another big exodus to Russia from the Icelandic fans?
Yeah, especially with the first game, the Argentina game, that, you know, sold out and everyone's trying to get to that game. The other games are maybe you could probably get a ticket for that one. But there's definitely a lot of excitement to go out there and follow the team and bring our Viking clap with us.
Stefan Augustsson, who you can follow on the Iceland World Cup podcast. So, James, how are they going to finish? How's the group going to finish then?
You know what? I wouldn't at all be surprised if Argentina failed to get out of this group.
What?
Yeah. Well, again, I know looking back at qualifying, how difficult South American qualifying is. They won just one of their four under Sampaoli, and that was that incredible Messi game, the hat-trick away in Ecuador.
Mm.
So, you know.
So if they're not getting out, who is?
I think we're going to see Nigeria get through, and also I think I'm going to have to go with Croatia.
Wow.
Just for
Jack,
a wild card.
Well, at the risk of sounding like I'm copying, I tend to agree.
Really? Nigeria and Croatia are at this group?
I think it's enormously even. I think this is one of the most even groups, and it wouldn't surprise me majorly if any of them got out or any of them. I know that's deeply boring, sorry.
Matt, I've got to go Argentina, Nigeria, just because I haven't renewed that contract for next season yet. I'd quite like to keep it.
Daniel?
I'll be boring and say Argentina and Croatia 1-2.
No one's going to say Iceland?
No, sorry.
All right, I'll say Iceland and Argentina. Now, that was Group D. Next up, some Group E, love. We're heading here. Mas gosta de boteco, de cerveja, de garrafa e no caligô. E toda vez que eu relaxo, eu imagino um mundo belo assim, com você do lado. Gosta de boteco, de cerveja, de garrafa e no caligô. Sweet sounds of Atitude 67 with cerveja de garrafa, which is what they're listening to in Brazil when they're not planning their street parties to celebrate the Hexa. Jack Lang, Brazil in a group with Switzerland, Costa Rica and Serbia. Finish top of this puppy and you'll have probably Mexico in the last 16. If you come second, though, you're looking at maybe Germany. Now, Brazil, last time we saw them in a World Cup, Jack, they were getting beaten 7-1 by Germany, so they probably don't want to face them again right now.
I think if Brazil could avoid one team at this tournament and at all future tournaments, it would be Germany, yeah.
This is a very different Brazil team, though, under Tite?
Yes, it's, you know, if you haven't been paying attention to Brazil in the last 4 years, it's a cycle of two halves. So they basically wasted 2 years on Dunga, which was fairly laughable. So it's a two-year-old team, basically, under Tite, and they look a lot more coherent than they have probably for over a decade. He's kind of brought in new talent, not necessarily all young players. Gabriel Jesus was his kind of pet project, but players who had been in and out of the team before him, like Casemiro, Felipe Coutinho, have been given a key role. Mm. They've grown into it. And basically, I think if you had to summarise what he's done tactically in one sentence, it would be he's reduced the team's dependence on Neymar.
Right.
There is a slight irony there, of course, because Neymar dug them out of a hole against Croatia. But as a rule, they seem to have much more swagger. There's more coherence. They have more passing options. They're willing to attack down both flanks. And it's, I think, a far more convincing team than the one we saw 4 years ago.
All right. Well, the big question that everyone's been asking about Brazil is how fit is Neymar after his foot injury? And he did make his return in the second half against Croatia and scored an absolutely blinding goal, eh, Daniel?
Yeah, and as Jack says, there feels a really nice balance to Brazil now, and that there clearly is a reliance on Neymar in so much as he's one of the best players in the world. But we're also talking about a team that, in, for example, defensive midfield, has Casemiro at Real Madrid, has Paulinho at Barcelona, has Fernandinho at Manchester City. So there doesn't feel like a soft centre to Brazil anymore, and yet he's managed to make them more very flamboyant going forward, particularly in qualifying, which is, he's done a really, really good job, hasn't he, Tite?
The injury to Dani Alves, is there any spin that we could put on that to make it a positive thing?
I think what it will mean is Brazil will be potentially very lopsided because they've got Marcelo on the left. Neymar, I presume, will start on from the left nominally. Coutinho will start on the right and inevitably drift in. So quite quickly, I think they become quite lopsided. But when you've got those two players on the left, I mean, that's going to be hard for any defence in the world to cope with if they start overlapping.
Yeah. You went along downfield, didn't you, to see them play Croatia, Jack?
Yes.
Were you impressed?
It was quite a difficult afternoon for them, actually. I'd also seen them at Wembley against England, and in that game they'd been really frustrated by a back five to the extent that Chicha had been looking, like he's looked over the last few months, for variations, kind of tactical variations, to break down sides if they do low the defence. Like he's talked of, he calls it a ritmista, which is a rhythmist, a percussionist, to dictate the play in more central areas so Coutinho could come inside. But against Croatia, who weren't playing a back five, they're playing a back four, but basically matched Brazil all over the pitch, identical formation. And Brazil took a long time, actually, to get any kind of rhythm. They struggled because I think, so Fernandinho was brought into the side. Casemiro sits in front of the defence and Fernandinho was just ahead of him alongside Paulinho. Didn't have a very good game and they looked very turgid in that midfield. All changed when Neymar came on, not only because of Neymar, but also because Coutinho looked a little bit more creative and comfortable inside.
In summary, this looks like an impressive vintage of the Seleção.
Yeah, I think so. They've got a lot going for them. There's the team spirit in the camp is very good, demonstrated by the fact that when Neymar scored at the weekend, he ran over to the physios who've got him fit. I think the idea is to have him at peak fitness entering the knockout stages. So the group stage will be seen as a kind of a launch ramp for him. And I think if he gets going, Brazil are going to take some stopping because, as Daniel said, there is talent all over the pitch now.
Certainly is. Particularly between the posts, those goalkeepers say. Matt, let me ask you a question. What did Mick McCarthy do in 1990 that Pele did in 1970?
That, I mean, who knows where to start with that?
You have a think about that.
Yeah, I will. I'm just trying to think of anything that those two would have in common. Coming up blank.
We'll come back to that one. You wanted to make a point, though.
Yeah, I just find it, Brazil-wise, I'm sort of looking for weaknesses in them, and I guess they're just psychological as much as anything. Jack's already mentioned about the prospect of facing Germany, but I just find this thing of rotating the captains a little bit odd for a tournament like the World Cup, and when you've got players of the mentality of Neymar, who maybe need keeping in check, and you think about the great Brazil sides who had strong figures as captain in the past, I just wonder if that might prove to be a decision that they come to regret.
Mm. We'll have to see. They do start as strong favourites for this group. Who do you see going through alongside them? Your options are Switzerland, Costa Rica, or Serbia. Hey, Daniel, Serbia.
I'm Team Serbia here. They won a group that was not particularly strong. They got past Wales and Ireland, basically. But more than a lot of teams coming into this tournament, when I was making notes, there's a lot of countries whose players aren't in form. Serbia seems to be the opposite. Alexander Mitrovic has scored a heck of a lot of goals in the championship for Fulham. They have Sergej Milinkovic-Savic, who is bang in form. They've got a central midfield probably of Luka Milovic from Palace and Nemanja Matic at Manchester United. There's a lot there. And I think they're a slight dark horse. I mean, obviously finishing second in the group becomes very difficult because you probably play Germany, but I think Switzerland are ranked sixth in the world, but Serbia should not be scared of Switzerland at all, I don't think.
A grizzled back line there with Ivanovic and Kolarov, but it is surely all about Milinkovic-Savic. Is this going to be his breakout tournament, James? And how excited should people be who haven't watched him turn out for Lazio?
Very excited, because he's a very unusual player in that he's, 6'3", and yet he's got all the kind of skill that you'd associate with a Brazilian. Was fantastic in that final game against Inter, even though it didn't go for his side. Finished the season with 12 league goals, which was more than any Lazio midfielder has ever had in history. And you look back at some of the players they've had, Deki Stankovic, even Pavel Nedved. But the problem, I think, really, is that he's only played two games for Serbia. He didn't play a part in their qualifying campaign. It was one of the reasons why the FA were aggrieved with Muslin, who was the predecessor for Krstajic. And I think, a little bit like Pogba, he's quite a difficult player to integrate into a side.
Right.
You need a very specific structure around him for him to do what he's so good at.
Which is now the responsibility of Mladen Krstajic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is another nation which has recently changed managers. And in other cases, we've suggested this is going to be a problem. Daniel, you don't see Muslin's departure as being an issue?
Traditionally, Serbia going to tournaments and aim to be ugly, and aim to win, if not dirty, then certainly win ugly. I hope that the new coach sees this with Brazil as the clear group leaders and with Germany probably coming next. I hope he sees this as a chance to kind of roll the dice on it and try and integrate someone like Milinkovic-Savic and try and keep faith with Alexander Mitrovic, and Dusan Tadic will probably play as well and actually try and be attacking, because I don't think Switzerland or Costa Rica will expect that from a Serbia side. If you watch Serbia's under-21s, they are incredibly attacking. They try and play really fluent football. So I hope this is a kind of a new era for Serbia, and I think this is a good chance to do it.
Can I just have a quick point on the captain, Kolarov?
Yeah.
Because this was one of the changes that Krstajic brought in when he became coach. He basically stripped Ivanovic of the captaincy and gave it to Kolarov, then benched Ivanovic, then had to bring him back. But Kolarov's had an excellent season with Roma. I think it might come as a bit of a surprise for people to learn, since he's left England, that this season there are only three players in Serie A who created more chances than Kolarov for his teammates, and can often win you games just by virtue of the fact that he's a fantastic free kick taker. He's a wily veteran, but I think he could be a match winner on the day for them.
All right. Does anyone want to make a case for Switzerland or Costa Rica? Costa Rica, Jack, of course, who were one of the stories of the last World Cup, topping the group with England, Italy and Uruguay, losing then in the quarterfinals to Holland only on penalty kicks. This time, how are they set?
They're actually a very similar side to the side we saw 4 years ago. So after that tournament, there was a brief period for attempted renovation under Paolo Wanchope. Didn't go very well. He's been replaced by Oscar Ramirez, who basically has restored all of his predecessor's work. So Jorge Luis Pinto used a five-man defence, four in midfield, one up front in the last World Cup, aiming to score in the break. That's what they do now. The team knows each other really well because the personnel is more or less the same. So I think there are reasons to think they will be solid, but they might struggle a little bit because, firstly, they're not a surprise package anymore, which may be, you know, the Iceland problem as well. And also, key players have had very disrupted seasons. So Joel Campbell's barely played for Betis until right at the end of the season. Brian Ruiz has been in and out. And yeah, I think they will probably look to secure a couple of draws and sneak a win, but I think they will have a hard time getting out.
What about Switzerland? Who, none of the teams that I traditionally think of as being really dull along with Serbia. I mean, this has the potential to be a really awful group, even if Brazil are in it. What about Switzerland?
I mean, they've got a problem which we've been talking about quite a lot in this group of players, not playing regularly or well for their club. You know, Stefan Lichtsteiner, the captain, not getting much of a look in, and Haris Seferovic, who plays up front for them, hasn't scored or completed 90 minutes for club or country in 2018. So that's where their problem lies. But they were scintillating in qualifying. The only points they dropped were that defeat against Portugal, maybe a little lucky to sort of just about amble past Northern Ireland in the playoff. But
lucky, yeah, with the handball penalty. Yeah.
But it makes them really difficult to get a read on because they were quite poor in those two games. But as I say, they were one of the best European teams over the qualification campaign. Obviously, they're ranked sixth in the world or something ridiculous, aren't they? I don't think they're anywhere near that good. But for me, it's them or Serbia for second place.
I quite like them for second place, actually.
Switzerland?
I mean, all of this is with a massive caveat because they haven't played many good teams, but they've kept 10 clean sheets in the last 13 games. I think they know their limitations, which goes a long way at the World Cup. They've snuck out of the group at the last two major tournaments, and I think they're going to benefit from playing Brazil first. If there is going to be a bedding in period for Neymar, it will be in that first game. Brazil have been frustrated, as I mentioned before, by teams who sit back. And I think from what I've been hearing from the Switzerland camp, they'd be delighted with a draw in that game. So a 0-0 in that, never know, and they could be away.
Right. Jack's calling Switzerland to get a result against Brazil and Switzerland to accompany the Seleção out of the group. James, who's going through?
I'm going to go with Brazil and Serbia.
Dan?
That's another one for me, yeah.
Matt?
Brazil and Switzerland, I think the experience of the two coaches between those two teams might be the telling factor.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Unbelievable, this.
Next up, it's Group F, and they can only mean this. Nichts in der Schule gelernt, für das, was ich heute mache. Nicht viel in der Schule verkehrt, und doch nur bis zur 9. Klasse. Während du in der Uni studierst, macht Gazi mit heute Kasse. Sweet Sounds of Gazoos with Half Time there. Featuring, as far as I can tell, a line about bouncy castles, which is nice. In this group, Germany, where Gazoos is a big star, Mexico, Korea and Sweden. And we're joined now, actually, by Frida Fagerlund of Aftonbladet. Frida, so nice of you to pop in.
Oh, thank you for having me.
No, it's a delight. We can hear why Sweden. Why Sweden, Frida?
Why might they go through? Mm. Well, to start with, I don't think anyone expected us to be in the World Cup. When we were drawn against Italy in the playoff, everyone was like, okay, goodbye, see you in another 4 years. And no one thought that they will go through. And then they did. And it's, you know, in Sweden, it's called the miracle in Milan, because that was almost like, you know, what it felt like when they went through. So the expectations aren't that high, really. We know that it is a limited team. But at the same time, if we can beat Italy, why can't we, you know, come second in the group and go through to the next round.
You've not seen much of Italy of late, is all I can think. No Zlatan, of course, these days. Is that slightly better, maybe, in terms of the team, the way they play?
Well, I think it's always good to have a quality player on your team, of course. Sweden is better with Zlatan than without, but at the same time, Sweden went through because they are a very solid group, a very good, strong team together. There aren't really any big stars. Our biggest star is Emil Forsberg of RB Leipzig, who's been rumoured to Liverpool and Arsenal and so on. But apart from him, it's a decent team. But they work very well together, and that's why they've gone through.
Which nation do you see as your biggest rival for that? Are you concerned about Mexico, South Korea?
I think my biggest concern is Mexico.
Yeah.
You know that teams from South America play very well football. That's my biggest concern. I think South Korea, that's a game we should be able to win. I think we are more organised than South Korea is. So hopefully we have 3 points there. Hopefully maybe we have 3 points even against Mexico. And then obviously Germany, beforehand, I feel like it's a game we've already lost, but at the same time, everything can happen. So
didn't you have a game when you came back from 4-0 down at halftime?
Yeah.
So you never know. That's the crazy thing about football. Nobody likes South Korea, though. Is Sweden going to take 3 points against South Korea, Daniel?
Yeah, I think as a rule, the Asian sides in this tournament are as weak as they've ever been. The best of them, I think, is probably the best two of them are Japan and Iran, and both have got. Japan's draw isn't bad, but Iran's draw is awful in Group B. South Korea are one of the weakest teams in the tournament, I think. They obviously rely on Son Heung-min, but shut him down, and there's actually very little else behind him. So I agree. I think Sweden will beat them, and having them in the first game is obviously brilliant, because it means if you win that first game, suddenly the pressure is then on Mexico to do the same and to beat Sweden. So, yeah, I think the draw does well for Sweden. I agree. I think Mexico are probably favourites to go through ahead of them.
All right. Mexico have gone out in the last 16 of six straight World Cups now, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Daniel that I think they're very much favourites for second place, but you almost wonder if it's just a hiding to nothing, because they'll probably lose to Brazil in the last 16. But they've set the standard for themselves in the last six World Cups. Only Germany and Brazil and Mexico have got out the group every time. So they've certainly got a chance. They've got some decent players Mexico. So you'd like to think that they'll be able to at least give Germany a game and maybe give Brazil a game in the last 16. But yeah, South Korea, very much the whipping boys of this group.
Some of those decent players that you're referencing there, Rafa Marquez still, Chicharito, Ochoa in goal, and young Chucky. Everyone's getting very excited about... Is it Irving Lozano? Lozano? How is it, Jack?
I don't know.
Chucky.
Chucky.
Why is everyone so excited about him?
He's a pacey winger. I think he's perhaps still growing into, top-level football at PSV. He's can be a little bit haywire. So recent Mexico games, one of their main issues has been finishing off chances. So they only beat Scotland 1-0 earlier in the week, created 34 shots and only scored once. Lozano, I think, was as guilty as anyone in that. That, I think, will be their issue. But interesting you mentioned Marquez. I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's the only player at the World Cup currently wanted by the US Treasury on suspicion of drug trafficking.
No way.
Yeah. Somehow managed to still get in the squad despite that. And I guess if the strikers do need a better supply.
Right.
Yeah, Mexico were booed off at the Azteca in that 1-0 win against Scotland. And they were calling for the manager to go. And I'd expect them to maybe draw on some of the lessons they learnt from the Confederations Cup last summer, when they did get out of the group and then they were hammered by Germany. And all of the last year has been about preparing to play Germany again. And his best laid plan, which was to play Diego Reyes, the centre-back, as a midfielder in front of the defence, he's injured. Hector Moreno, the other first-choice defender, he was at Roma for the first half of the season, then went to Real Sociedad. He hasn't played much. And the other centre-back that they had, Néstor Araujo, is injured. So I think their problems will be as much at the back as they are, in terms of scoring goals. So I think I would usually say Mexico would be the favourite to be a runner-up in this group, but I think Sweden can do it on the basis of all those problems, really.
Wow.
Also, we shouldn't forget that three of the last four holders have gone out in the group stages. The only one is Brazil from 2000 to 2006. The others have all failed.
Well, who are the holders right now again? It's Germany, isn't it?
There you go.
Right, Germany, who've only just gone and shot the footballing world by leaving out one of their brightest talents from their World Cup squad. Leroy Sané, only one man to ask about this, and that's Raphael Honigstein, who producer Ben dialed up on his holidays earlier on.
Huge surprise, Lewis dropping him, name-checking Julian Brandt as the guy that made it into the final 23 ahead of him. In a way, though, perhaps not as a surprise, because Sané would have gone as third or fourth or perhaps even fifth choice in wide positions. And my guess is that Löw doesn't feel that the system can be or should be tweaked to the point where he fits in better, and perhaps doesn't quite trust him to go to Russia as a substitute and being happy and supportive in that role.
Raf, it's not the easiest group in the world you've got there, and England are looming large in the quarterfinals if you make it that far. But are you going to do it again? Are you going to retain the World Cup?
I think Germany go into this tournament with a reasonable degree of confidence. I think this time around, they'd of course like to defend their title, but they know that no one's done it in the modern times and that it's going to be very, very difficult. The recent history of tournaments has taught them that it comes down to very small details when it comes to the semifinals and finals. Germany have lost games where they were the better team. They've won games where they were probably outplayed to a certain extent. And I think the main thing you can do is make sure that you are in contention and try to deal with the problems and with misfortune, all these things that tournaments throw up, as best as you can. And I think whatever you want to say about this Germany team in Lviv, one thing they have shown over the last few years is that they've always turned up. Not always winning, of course, but they're always there and they take some stopping. And once it goes down to the semi-final, perhaps even final, it's a coin flip. But I think Germany will be strong enough to go all the way in terms of the length of the competition.
Give us a bit of optimism. Where are you weakest?
Well, Germany don't have a world-class left-back. Jonas Hector is very decent, very serviceable, but he's just been relegated with SDF to Köln. And there's no real backup for him of a similar level either, to make matters worse. So I think that's where Germany are a little bit vulnerable. I also think that the midfield, apart from Toni Kroos, is of course the first name on the team sheet, perhaps doesn't quite have the same flexibility and guile that they had when Schweinsteiger and Lahm were still around as option, and when Kadir were still 4 years younger. So some positives up front, but perhaps not that much quality in the centre.
Raphael Honigstein will be joining us throughout the World Cup in Russia.
Just to jump in on that, the Sané thing might not even be the most outrageous thing about that squad.
Go on.
They've given a left-back the number two jersey, Marvin Plattenhardt.
He's trolling us, Yogi, isn't he?
It's disgusting.
They've gone to six straight semi-finals in major tournaments. There's no way they're coming out.
Group stages now, Jimbo.
Well, why? Why, James? Construct a world in which that could happen.
Well, it's the intensity there that we see. It's very hard to repeat. The last team to actually go back-to-back in World Cups was Brazil in, 58, 62, I think.
We've certainly seen them struggling in qualifying.
Well, they haven't won the last five games, as we record. They're all friendlies. They've been experimental and all that sort of thing. But there's the curse of Confederations Cup, Jimbo. If you win that, you don't win the World Cup.
Is that right? Is that a thing?
That is a thing, yeah. So okay. There you go.
No, but 100% in their qualifying matches.
You did ask me to construct. I was being devil's advocate there.
Neuer's fitness, is that something? Could you maybe?
Well, no, because Ter Stegen is not only a very good goalkeeper, but he plays in more or less the same style as Neuer.
Where are the goals coming from now that Miroslav Klose is gone? Could that be a thing?
The Mario Gomez button is still there to be pushed, but Timo Werner's emerged.
That's the worrying thing for everyone else, is that they've suddenly found Timo Werner, who actually is a brilliant centre-forward option for them. And I think they will use him and Müller in tandem, which is pretty frightening for everyone else, I think. Mm. I think they're the favourites.
Frida, what do you think?
Well, I think so too. I think Timo Werner is a very, very exciting player. Lucky for us, Emil Forsberg knows him very well. So hopefully he's, been given some tips on how to stop him.
Okay. Your predictions then to qualify from the group? Sweden and Germany?
Yeah.
Matt, what do you think?
I think we might have a full house here. Germany, Sweden for me.
Daniel?
I'll go against Matt then. Germany, Mexico.
Ooh. James?
Mexico and Sweden. No.
Come on, man. Live a little.
Okay, tongue-in-cheek, I will say Mexico or Sweden.
Good for you. Jack?
I think Germany and Mexico just about.
All right. It's going to be tight, though, isn't it? It's going to be fascinating to watch, as indeed all the World Cup will, and you can follow it right here with us after you're done watching it on the Totally Football Show's World Cup coverage. Time now to hear from Paddy Power talking to producer Ben.
Thank you, Jimbo. I'm back here with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, how are you since we last spoke?
I'm wonderful, thank you. Buzzing for this World Cup.
Fantastic. OK, let's look at Group D quickly then. Argentina, they're the favourites to go through in this group, I presume. But let's look for a bit of value. What about them not keeping a clean sheet?
Yeah, I mean, this is a good pick based on the fact they have 10 attackers basically on the pitch. They're 6-1 not to keep a clean sheet, which strikes me as slightly mad. They'll score a lot of goals. I think they'll concede some too.
What about Iceland then? Can they not only get out of the group, can they make it to the quarterfinals?
They're 6-1 to reach the quarterfinals, which is interesting. At the Euros last time, they would have been out 60-1, but then, of course, they met England.
Let's look at Group E then. Is there any chance of Switzerland finishing ahead of Brazil?
I would have said no, but our traders' prices went up for me, and it's a relatively short 15-2. I thought that would have been like 100-1. Brazil, outright favourites, but Switzerland apparently have a half-decent team and Shaqiri.
Well, let's look for something a bit more certain then. Germany, they've got to be favourites, so you're going to have to give me the price on them. But also, looking for a bit of value again, what would happen if they get knocked out in the quarterfinals?
Germany are our joint favourites. They're 9-2 with Brazil, original, I know. To go out in the quarterfinals, they're 10-3. That's where they might meet a certain England team. So great value there, or not.
All right, and I presume that Thomas Müller is going to be scoring a bag full of goals in their progress to the World Cup final. What are the odds on him being the top scorer again?
He's actually quite a long shot. He's 30-1, which is some way behind the favourites, which are Messi, Griezmann, Neymar, etc. If Germany are going to progress, he's probably a good pick, although Timo Werner at 14-1 will probably be their top scorer, I think.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com, 18+ only, begambleaware.org, and when the fun stops... Stop. The answers, Matt, to the questions.
Mick McCarthy, Pelé, yeah.
Yeah, OK, so what did Mick McCarthy do in 1990 that Pelé did in 1970? Do you know that, Frieda?
I have no idea. I was born 1992. So.
Is it anything? But this is, you know, as were we all, but this is history we're talking here.
Is it something to do with Viagra?
No, I don't think it was invented in 1970, actually. But yeah, good effort. The answer is concede the most fouls at a World Cup.
Ah.
Use that one on your friends. Name the only World Cup which Nigeria have featured in but haven't played Argentina. Only once did they go to a World Cup and not play Argentina. Daniel, you were right, 1998. No. How many goals did Argentina's Didier Six be directly involved with in the 1978 World Cup? The answer was 5. Oh, no. Ironically. Raw drama for you there. As I say, look out for our other podcast covering the other World Cup groups. I do hope you've enjoyed this one. Many thanks to Frieda, Matt, Daniel, James and Jack. And we'll catch up with you again very soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. Subscribe now and get the latest episode delivered right to your phone for free.